You are now entering the fifth dimension.
Hey, fellow weirdos, welcome to a new season of the Fifth Dimension podcast. This is season 3, episode 1, and what an extraordinary return for us. We're getting right back on the horse to share with you all this nice audio of a podcast that we've created here. We will be experimenting with the format and adding some new stuff to the old. I'm so glad to have you all here along for the ride. And here with me, as always, is my co-host, the person I have the distinct honor to call my brother, but most of you know as a plain hater, my brother, Luis.
You just have to fucking say that. It's always the hater part. I wonder if everybody agrees with you, but like I said, I'll get back to that. But first things first, hello to all you weirdos out there. It's good to be back. We were in a small hiatus. So we're just taking a quick break. But yeah, it's definitely good to be back here, Juan, and record with you. But as far as this hater thing, I don't think you guys really understand what that fucking means when you say it, you know?
Oh, yeah?
To me, it just seems like you guys have an issue with the unknown, right? And what I do and what I say sometimes can be just like that.
That's true.
And that's why you fear it.
It could be possible. So, Luis, to kick off this new season, we are adding a third special guest, a new guest to the podcast. I'd like to, first, this person is have a privilege to call a friend. We graduated from college together. I want to welcome my good friend, Kurt.
Juan, Luis, thank you so much for having me and for letting me help you kick off this season. It is great to catch up with you, Juan. Luis, it is a pleasure to meet you, virtually or otherwise. This is a really incredible and diverse podcast that you both have going on, and I've always enjoyed listening to it. So I am very excited to be here.
Yeah, well, Kurt, as Juan's friend, I guess by extension, to some degree, you're a friend of mine. So yeah, welcome to the podcast, bro.
Thank you so much, Luis.
So Kurt, like I said, Kurt and I attended Eastern New Mexico University. We both were enrolled in the graduate school program and we graduated at the same time. Kurt, in the time since I've last seen you.
Excuse me, sir.
What's up?
Were you guys doing the same program?
Yeah. We did the master's in communication.
In communication. Okay, excuse me, sir, again. Once again, did you guys, I know you met, what's his name? Mr. Leary, right?
Leonard Leary?
Yeah. Was it Leonard Leary?
Yeah. Mr. Leary passed away, gosh, a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
But I don't think I knew him.
Did you ever meet him? When, oh man, that sucks.
Yeah.
Communications, right?
Yeah. So Kurt, Leonard Leary, or Professor Leary, was a college professor at Eastern New Mexico University when Luis and I were with the Upward Bound program. And he taught our public speaking Upward Bound summer classes. And I can't remember when he retired, but he was with the communication department for a long, long time.
Gotcha.
He was the reason you went into communications, huh?
He's one of the reasons, yeah, for me.
What about you, Kurt?
I actually went to, I got my undergraduate degree in music at Eastern, and then I took a class with Patty Dobson, who I still, she is the chair of the communications department, and she was when Juan and I were going to school there, and I was just kind of thinking, like, she made it so enjoyable. It was a required class, and it just kind of, like, got my brain thinking about this communications or something like communications adjacent being something I wanted to do. And that was kind of my introduction to that. And it was interesting. Juan and I went through the graduate program when not only the graduate program itself, but the communications program as a whole was going through a lot of changes. I had found out during my undergraduate graduation that they had gone completely online, and I was like, oh great. But It actually turned out to be like very flexible. And Juan, you were the one of maybe exactly four people that I actually got to interact with in person in that program.
And that's true because I think we met each other outside of it. We knew each other, and I think we just kind of stayed in touch. And yeah, you're right. I don't know if you do you remember Roderick? Roderick was one of the students for the master's program, and then there was Aaron and Vidi and a lot of folks.
I do remember Aaron. Roderick, the name sounds familiar. It was. I think you and I were like one of the few people that responded to the discussion boards like right away.
That's right.
That was always fun. But yeah, it was, all things considered, it was a good time. I think we, yeah, because there were big changes in terms of like the professors that were leaving and like coming on board.
What year
But
was this? I don't want to put you guys as like, I don't want to put you on blast or on the spotlight here to say, well, let's see how old they are, but when was this?
oh gosh, that was 2014, 2015 when the program started evolving and changing. And then I remember 2016 was it had transitioned to online. We were mostly online.
2016 is a year very vivid in my memory.
Oh yeah.
For better and worse.
Yeah, for all
There
of us.
was grad school graduation.
Yep.
The movies were good. And then on the flip side of that, the election.
Oh my
But
gosh, yeah.
I won't. I'll just leave it at
The election
that.
the
Next Trump.
election. But in anyways, Kurtz, we welcome you to this podcast. We're very, very excited to have you on here.
Thank you both. I am super excited.
Yeah, man. When Juan mentioned that he wanted to add other other hosts and bring in other people for the show or for the episodes, I was kind of hesitant about it first, but I was like, you know what? Juan, as long as I've known him, whenever he has a project or whenever he leads a project, he has never steered us wrong. So
Oh
let's go.
man, Luis, that's too kind of you to say, man. That's very kind of you to say.
Yeah.
But, oh, go ahead, Kurt.
No, I was going to say I can be your guinea pig for however you treat
Well,
guest hosts moving forward.
the
Do something. Poke, poke. Say something
Right.
else.
Well, I keep up with Kurt through Instagram threads and Facebook. Kurt, you and I have electronically just kind of kept in touch. And you, while we have different opinions on a variety of topics, your consistent topic, though, is movies and cinema.
It's a topic where I try to avoid trouble where I can. And this is the topic for me where I can get into enough trouble.
Oh, yeah. Easily, huh? I can see that. I can
No,
see
it's
so.
oh yeah, go
Go
ahead,
ahead.
sorry.
No, go ahead, man.
It is, I do like to talk movies quite a bit. I think it was right before the pandemic I started getting into Letterboxd, that social media site, and I
For
stopped
those
and
who don't know, what is Letterboxd? What does it do?
Get out of here.
Letterboxd is a essentially it's kind of like an online diary of sorts. You can track what movies you're watching. You can create a watch list. It's sort of like IMDb in that
Oh,
respect.
okay.
But they do emphasize like the social media aspect of it, where you can kind of connect with people and share opinions and kind of see what who you can follow different users, and you can kind of see what they're watching on there. It's kind of grown in popularity a lot recently. There's a lot of professional critics on there. A
Yeah.
lot of YouTube video creators are on there, so it's. Yeah, essentially it's a social media site for very specific to movies, I
Very
think.
specific
I
movies,
see,
okay.
I see. So would you say you're kind of like a movie nerd or a movie aficionado of some sorts? I'm gonna
Yeah.
go really. So I'm gonna guess like maybe you're into kind of what noir films or something?
That is a good guess. It's It's really, I think, kind of the way I see it, I don't really have a specific favorite genre, but I would definitely put like noir as like a close second for me.
Oh, wow.
If I had to pick a specific genre that I liked, I think it would be dark comedy. Just because that's the kind of thing that's so difficult to pull off well, and because I like the feeling of laughing and cringing at the same time.
Oh my God. Okay,
Yeah, I
so
have a
what is
question for you, Kurt. Excuse
yeah.
me, sir. Excuse me.
Go
Excuse me.
ahead,
Excuse
go
me.
ahead. You got it. You
I
got
have
it.
a question for you, Kurt. What do you think about, or what is your opinion on? Because I know you just mentioned that there's professional critics, but what do you think about content creators? Not really experts, I would say, but content creators on YouTube that are movie critics.
That is a good question, Luis. So there are, I'm going to point, I'll single out like a couple of YouTube channels that I really like. I think Patrick Willems, have you guys heard of him?
I think I've read across
No.
him.
He's, there are, I think they're on YouTube in particular, I think it's very easy to get into like that say what's on your mind kind of thing, and there isn't a lot of nuance in the conversations that they have. But I call out Patrick Williams just because like he does, you can tell he's very well read on the forum, and he understands, he studied cinema, and he has some interesting takes, and he always has a very clean and enthusiastic way of presenting them. He kind of like the he's kind of like the professional ring critic mixed in with like the nerdier aspects of content criticism, content creators who are critics. Did that make sense? Yeah, the YouTube thing is very interesting. Just be and I think some other YouTube, and I would call them critics, I guess, that kind of fall into like very interesting takes on cinema who do a good job of that are Thomas Flight and this channel called the Royal Ocean Film Society. I think put in another way, these are the kind of YouTube content creators, if you will, that have interesting takes on Star Wars.
Oh,
I
dang, are
see.
we? But
Hey, you could be it could be like Juan's favorite content creator, Soups.
oh my gosh. I don't know how much you're on TikTok, Kurt, but there are a bunch of young content creators who are on TikTok, and they have for one rapid fire hot take after another where they end up criticizing a film and then backpedaling and then trying to Right, try they're trying to pander to the audience. If the audience says, "Well, we disagree with you, we feel like the movie was great," and so they'll backpedal and they'll try to pander. But I feel like both of you and Luis, are pretty consistent with a take, even if it's a hot take, that you'll stick with it, even if 90% of the audience disagrees with you, that you'll still stick with the critique. You wouldn't backpedal in any way.
No.
It's definitely, yeah, that's an interesting thought, and I feel like I am not on TikTok very often, and just because I hear it's one of those like distractions, and it's like, oh boy, do I need another distraction in my life?
Jeez, is it ever?
yeah. There is an art to making your points, because a lot of the YouTube creators that I had mentioned, their videos are upwards of 45 minutes to an hour.
Oh, wow.
Which is interesting when you think about how, like, 10 years ago, that wasn't even the case for YouTube. But then, like, with TikTok, there can be an art to making your points very succinctly and to make your point really stick. And I wonder if that short form format, so to speak, causes people to like think on their toes and instantly backtrack without thinking about what they're saying, I guess. Not
Yeah.
criticizing TikTokers in particular. But it's an interesting thing to think about.
I will. I hate them. Just kidding. No, not all of them. Not all
So,
of them. Not all of them.
Kurt, you have a very unique take on movies. Luis has some rival opinions and observations that you have. But overall, I do consider you an expert on the topic of cinema. So that's what we're diving into today.
Well, that's kind of you. I define expert. I don't know about that. I am definitely a movie buff, and I'm sure It became one of those interests where I felt I could go about watching movies and like critiquing them on my own terms. Growing up, I had watched, I was always interested in watching Ebert and Roper when it came on like every Friday night, and I just thought that was a lot of fun. And then I started getting into Roger Ebert's written criticism, and I was like, oh, he has an interesting way of looking at things, like a very personal. He wrote about movies in the way that he's not so much critiquing a movie and telling us what to think, but he always wrote about movies as if it was an experience that was happening to him, if that makes sense.
Totally.
But
Could you explain that a little bit more? Like, what do you mean, like an experience to him?
it's the way you would write about like a trip you take. I think Ebert wrote about like a movie he watched in that same way. Like he always emphasized the emotional impact that a movie had on him. And I think one of his philosophies was always make sure it's subjective. Don't try to be too objective, because it is at the end of the day your opinion on something, and it is what happened to you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. Okay, I see that.
All right. So I know that with both of you having observations of film and cinema, Luis typically likes to give a very harsh grade to any movie he watches. For you, Kurt, what's your rating system for movies? What does it look like for you?
It's a very arbitrary system. This kind of goes back to, well, I would say that when I'm watching movies, I feel like I can be a little too generous in terms of like my own opinions. I think I tend to score things a little bit higher. A friend of mine who looks at my Letterboxd account, like he's on Letterboxd as well, he says, like, you like everything you watch, and so I guess that's fair. But
It's
at the
just like
same,
Juan watching MCU movies.
oh my gosh, come on now.
Yeah. You can't trust this guy to give you a good rating. Get out of here, Juan.
It's funny you mentioned that, Luis, because
no.
I feel
Uh-oh.
like when I talk with when I critique something in a film like Blue Beetle, which overall I was very surprised by. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed that. People give me shit for taking things too seriously. Like I'll criticize the action sequences, and it's like, oh, this movie like really loses its thread anytime it goes into an action sequence. They'll be like, oh, come on, just enjoy the fucking movie or whatever.
Yeah.
I
I see that.
So I think again, I think it kind of goes back to like the Letterboxd thing, which again, I think it's very arbitrary. I think it depends on the movie itself in a way. I'm very much like, I'll say on Letterboxd, my ratings tend to skew a little bit higher. I think 3 stars through 5 stars is kind of my range, and I would say like generally, anything I give like 4.5 stars and 5 stars is pretty much a masterpiece. Not necessarily a perfect film, but it is like a worthwhile experience in a sense. A lot of favorites that I've enjoyed that I rewatch quite a bit are pretty 5-star-ish range, I think. I try not to go the full five on a first watch because who knows what I'm going to be thinking about it if I see it again. Or is it a really compelling experience that I don't want to see again? Like, is a very tough to watch movie. Maybe I'll be like, okay, it's 5 stars and I'm done with it.
So that happens though, where you feel like there's an excellent movie, 4.5, 5 star, that you just want to watch once, and that one experience is enough.
This is not a good answer because I've seen it twice. There is a movie called Come and See, which is about it's a Russian film, takes place in World War II, and it's about a kid who is very eager to join the war effort. And it is really one of those like horrors of war type movies. It is, and it's quite the experience. It is emotionally draining. It's very, you think about like really hard to watch movies, and that movie is really tough to revisit, I guess you could say. Very well directed. It is very beautifully filmed, and like the director conveys his point across very well, but it is just it's a it wears you out for sure.
Emotionally draining, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So on here you also say, well, we see 1-star films as well. Are those pretty rare for you?
I would say so. Yeah, it kind of the lower half of that star rating scale, I guess, is where it gets a little tricky. And I would say, like, I'm always interested in, I don't want to steer too far away from your question, but I'm always interested in kind of like that middle ground, like 2.5, 3 stars, because it's fascinating to talk about something that has a lot going for it, but also has a lot of flaws. And I think the difference between the two is, are the flaws overshadowed by the good stuff, vice versa, very uneven. But then, like, when you get into like the 2-star down, I think 2-star is just like a very mediocre film to me. It's not necessarily like it doesn't like offend me in any way in how bad it is, or it isn't like it's not like the most incompetent thing. I think it's just like a very boring movie. I would say like 1 star or 1.5 star. That's a very rare spot for
Wow.
me. Like
Okay.
a half star movie to me has to really offend me in some way, or it has to really work. I feel like this could mean two different things, but work hard in its badness,
Oh, wow.
I guess.
So most of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Right. No. I haven't caught up with that franchise, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of this. Like, I haven't seen a lot of this going on. It's
Spare your brain. Spare your
yeah.
brain.
I will say though, like Aliens versus Predator Requiem is a good example of a half star movie for me.
Oh, yeah. I
It
mean, I
is.
think I watched that film. I was like, oh my, it was offensively bad.
When you consider what came before, some of the greatest horror and or action movies in that franchise, arguably, and this pile of shit that is just so badly shot, has really stupid characters, terrible acting, just goes through the motions in just about every which way.
That pile of shit
That's
is all frowning now.
I think it's very interesting, right? That you look at movies like Freddy versus Jason,
yeah.
Predator versus Alien. This desire to have this interconnected universe where these fictional characters could potentially meet, it's becoming it I guess in the early 2010s it was like this, or even or mid 2000s it was this thing that the movie producers and I guess fans and audiences really wanted to push for toward.
One thing I've kind of noticed is, and I'm sure we'll get into this later on, but like we are very much an Easter egg kind of culture. We're kind of growing towards that, where what used to be an Easter egg in a movie is now like expected to be a major plot development, I guess. Maybe that's, I think that's overshooting it a little bit, but I think,
I think we know what you mean.
yeah, like in Predator 2, when Danny Glover enters the Predator's spaceship or whatever, it shows like one of the alien xenomorphs. And that is like a good example of, oh, this is a clever Easter egg and something that kind of signals you into thinking, oh, wow, they're in the same universe. And so now what's going to come from that? What can we see from that?
Okay, and you're saying those Easter eggs are now like this expectation for it to boom into a story, and the audience expectations to have a story.
I think so, yeah.
They
It's just
expect to
too
see
bad.
more Easter eggs, and the Easter egg itself has to be a story.
Yeah, I guess. I hope I'm not like, it's kind of like an interesting thing, because I think that's especially the case with Marvel in a sense, is
Yeah,
we'll get to
we'll get to it.
that.
I'm curious though. If those kind of movies are, you know, like you said, a half rating or 1.5 rating, what's a 4.5 to 5-star rating for you? What movie comes to mind?
Oh, good question.
So I'll touch on a recent example. I am filling in a huge gap right now and watching a lot of Werner Herzog films. He was part of the and he has, like, I'm sure if the name has to sound familiar, if nothing else, but he has like a very interesting personality, a very interesting accent, and he has a very he uses cinema, I think, and he's made a lot of feature films, he's made a lot of documentary films. He was also one of Roger Ebert's favorite directors. He has a very he's very well read. He has a very exploratory sense to himself, and I think he used cinema as a means to really look into just like the dark depths of humanity or whatever, and like humanity versus nature is kind of like a consistent theme in his films. But out of the recent movies that I've watched of his, I would say Aguirre, The Wrath of God, and Nosferatu the Vampire are very high up. Like I would say like 4.5.
Oh, wow. That's a
I think
pretty.
Nosferatu actually, I should clarify. There's Nosferatu the Vampire is kind of like a rough remake of a German silent film. But I would say like 4.5, 5 star for me, just because I love the atmosphere of those two films. They are films that I think, not saying that this is necessarily the definition for like a masterpiece, but they're films that aspire to poetry and music in a sense.
Ooh.
It's kind of like it is as much a story as it is like the emotions that the filmmaking itself evokes, I guess.
I see.
I think, but there are a lot of examples. I think, again, it just kind of depends on the movie. I would say Eraserhead by David Lynch, which is definitely like a moody, atmospheric type thing, is a good example of that. The Orson Welles movie, Touch of Evil, and I'm just like singling out something from his filmography, is a good example. And I would even say, like, because I'm probably going to be bashing them a lot later on, I want to give Disney credit where it's due. I think Zootopia qualifies as like 4.5.
Zootopia then follows with a laugh.
it's really hard to hold any sort of movie to a gold standard, right? I mean, every single ha movie has its own genre, its own style. People gravitate towards specific styles. And it's really hard to really define what a gold standard is, but for you all, what is that gold standard? What is what? How would you define a gold standard?
Well, I think I don't want to take over the conversation.
No, Kurt, you're our
By all means,
guest.
go ahead.
It's you're exactly right, Juan. It's kind of like you have whatever sort of art form you kind of have. It's kind of like you have your favorites, and if you're picking like the gold standard, it's almost like picking something out of a hat. So that being said, I think a great example that comes to my mind always instantly is Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai.
Seven Samurai.
That it's a 50s movie, and it's essentially it's about these villagers are being attacked by bandits, so they try to hire a group of seven samurai to defend their village, and a lot of the story it's. I would classify it as like an epic. It's 3.5 hours long, but length is irrelevant, right? But
We can talk
it's
about that here in a bit too.
it's about these villagers try to gather these seven samurai to protect their village, and the story is about like why these samurai are coming together, like their experiences, and it's great. It's a great action film. So you get the it's the best of both worlds. Or I won't say both, but More like the style and the substance, I guess you could say. I just throw that out there because it's a film that exemplifies how exciting films can be as a visual art form and a narrative one. It's simple story foundation in a sense, but the complexity comes with the characters, their histories, their motivations, and how all of that it molds into an exciting action story. In a sense, like how the director and the writers build up these characters to make you care about the action that comes afterwards, I think. And it's a great example, too, about how he was shaped by classic cinema. I think if you're not familiar with Akira Kurosawa, which I would say, like, if not, look at his Wikipedia page and pick like any single one of his films that are on there. I'm sure your mind will be blown afterwards. He was criticized in Japan as being like very Western because he was inspired a lot by John Ford and like some of the Westerns he made, like Stagecoach, I think is a good example, which is also a great film, but John Wayne stars in it. It was one of his early starring roles, I think. And how in turn, like Akira Kurosawa influenced other filmmakers like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg.
We have our brother, right, Jose? He usually has his takes on movies where they need to be rooted in, or need to be rooted and grounded in reality, right? Things that could happen or things that already happened. And he does, he seems to enjoy movies that are kind of like that, where they have to be grounded in reality and things that could be happening in the real world. Because if it's not, he's like, I'm just not into it, and he doesn't get into it. So I've kind of that's if that's what I'm hearing, right? Is that the kind of movies you like? Kind of things that are kind of grounded in reality?
That's a good question, Luis. You often hear from people that movies should also do the complete opposite, wherein, like, they want to escape. They want no. A good movie to somebody could mean, like, there's no bearing to reality whatsoever. And I think it's such a rich medium because of its capability to do both. And again, I think to answer your question, Luis, it all depends on what the movie itself is setting out to do. Does it want to ground itself in reality? But also, like, is it a film that really does like take you somewhere you would never see in real life? I think there has to be a good balance of both, I think.
Absolutely. I think the gold standard that I hear, and this is on the very surface level, Kurt, because I know you probably hear it, and but you know much more about the world of cinema than I do. But often I hear movies get compared to Goodfellas or some other Martin Scorsese film, and I often find myself in the superhero genres because it speaks to me. That's my niche, and I like that. But as you all know, what I'm about to say is, I think for me, action movies or superhero movies, the gold standard is still Marvel. Still, Marvel is the gold standard of superhero movies.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, superhero movies, I think, if I may, Juan, I think they've
Go for
already
it.
had their time to shine already. I think their moment has is coming to an end. But
Oh.
like you, I think all these the Goodfellas, The Departed, I think these are the movies that people, or like people like Jose, right? I'm gonna say people like Jose enjoy watching because it's again, it's rooted for them. It's real. It's raw for them. And you've already heard the criticisms from Scorsese. I think it was Martin Scorsese, right? How he blasted the MCU or
Oh
superhero
yeah,
movies.
yep.
What was his quote? Do you remember?
He said that Marvel, the MCU, or superhero movies are not cinema,
They're not cinema.
or something to that effect.
I can't remember the exact quote. You're right. I think one of the things he touches on is he had mentioned how well made they were, and actors doing well under the circumstances. One thing he mentioned is to him, superhero movies weren't, they didn't have like emotional stakes or whatever. It wasn't the cinema of quote unquote thoughts and feelings. And I might be paraphrasing a little bit. So for the record, you won't hear any argument from me on Scorsese. I think he's one of, at the very least, among American filmmakers, he's one of the greatest. I don't think every, I haven't seen every Scorsese movie, but every one that I have seen, I have enjoyed like massively. A lot of his films are on that 4.55 star scale for
Certainly,
me.
certainly.
If I don't love a movie of his that as much as others, because I think there's like the, you had mentioned Goodfellas one. There's the Goodfellas, Taxi Driver, Raging Bull trifecta. Like when people think of Scorsese, those three movies come up and they are all great. It's really hard for me to kind of like pick a great Scorsese or the best one, I guess I could say. But I think I'll add that the that Scorsese's cinema versus superhero movie comments, I think they're a little more nuanced than many folks let on. I think part of, so I think that the ideal cinema, I'll just say movie going experience, is to go into a theater, right? And I think Christopher Nolan said recently, like, there has to be a balance between, and I could be paraphrasing, there needs to be a balance between franchise filmmaking and original filmmaking. And I think cinema, movie going, movies in general, I think the ideal situation is to have that option to go into a movie theater and see Killers of the Flower Moon and The Marvels and get what you want out of both films. Again, like a good example of each film doing what it sets out to do. A good balance between like seeing a movie that really engages your intellect or really excites those thoughts and feelings versus, I'm not saying this derogatory, like a theme park movie where you're going into it, you're having a good time with it, and that's what the filmmakers are giving you. Like they're giving you that roller coaster, and roller
Absolutely,
coasters are fun.
Kurt, I think that you're hitting on a good point because I think for the average moviegoer, they don't see those themes playing out, and it's the oh, I gotta go see Marvel because it's the latest Marvel movie. On I've heard a lot of great things about this movie, Poor Things, and now I want to go see that because it has a lot of hype around it. But you're right, often Marvel movies, action movies, movies that are designed to be theme parks, basically just to entertain you. And then there's those cerebral type of movies that are meant to challenge you and make you think about the themes of the movie. But wouldn't that be the issue though? Like where, like again, I'm gonna bring Jose just because he's the closest thing that we have to someone that's contrast us in movie topics, movie genres, and everything else. Where he'll just say, no, if you're watching a film, part of it is okay, you're watching it, that's already entertainment, but there has to be an intellect, factor to it, or else you're just wasting your time.
I mean, I think that's his opinion, to be perfectly honest. I think if you engage in any sort of movie experience, it's whether or not you're wasting your time, it's on the individual. But for me, like keeping up with every aspect and phase of Marvel has been kind of my I gotta keep up with it. It's Marvel's got me addicted, right? But also making sure that I'm balancing that out, or at least watching movies that do challenge my perspective of the world.
You had mentioned, Juan, that superhero movies are your favorite genre. And I think what it comes down to is when you think about like the gold standards or like the top of the line, a very simple way of putting it is it's whatever speaks to you emotionally in one way, I think. The films, like whether it be, because I think you could have like your top five movies or whatever, and they could fall within different genres. But it's ultimately about like the thoughts, and I won't say like specifically like the cinema of thoughts and feelings or whatever, but it is whatever engages you on that emotional level. I think And I think the intellectual part of it has something to do with that too. It's really, there's no one way for me to kind of like pin it down. I never want to think that like I'm only into like certain types of movies.
But you're pretty much a any movie you'll watch and you'll provide a good critique slash your feedback on it is very insightful, Kurt. I think that on the stories that you've posted, on threads that you've posted, on the social medias that you've posted, you give a nice rounded view of the film and what either impressed you or what you felt short.
Well, I appreciate that. I think a good I'll point out two examples, I think. From the past year or so, I think like technically 2022 and 2023, both movies that I was disappointed in, but are essentially like two ends of the spectrum. So I think one movie that I saw early last year, it was nominated for the 2022 Oscars for Best International Film. And it was a movie called Close. And it's about these two friends. I want to say they're in like middle school. I can't remember vaguely, but they're young. They have a very close friendship. And the premise is people start to ask if they're actually in a relationship. And so there's, one of the kids starts having anxiety about that. And so these two friends start to drift apart. And this is a movie that is very much on the human drama level. Like it is very much a film grounded in reality. It's the emotions of these characters are what carries you throughout the film, and it's whatever they're experiencing. It is capital G grounded cinema. And I mentioned like on Threads that that was not necessarily, I don't think it's a terrible movie. I think that there's a lot of interesting things that the director, Lucas Daunt is his name, is taking with the movie. It is a type of film where it's not spelling out whatever these characters are feeling at a given moment. You're just kind of like thinking about them and you're going along with their emotional journey. Very personal one too. But I thought it was disappointing because, and this goes into spoiler territory, and I'm not going to give it away because I really do think it's one of those movies that if you do want to see it, you should see it and you should listen to everybody else instead of me. Because it is the type of movie where people are going to get different things out of it. And that's what makes it interesting. But it hinges, there's like a, I think twist is a somewhat redundant way of putting it, but it is essentially a twist that happens about halfway through the movie that takes it into a completely different direction. And it's the kind of thing for me that really, I saw it as kind of like a cheat within that specific movie, a very forced way of taking the story in a different direction when it was already going in an interesting direction.
I see.
So I think that's kind of like, and I don't want to like bash anything. I might be a hater by the time we're done.
Welcome to the
thank you, Louise.
club.
So there's a movie like that engages the emotions, I should say, a realistic movie that just falls short. So my other example from last year is one that I'm sure is fresh on everybody's minds. And
Real quick, Kurt.
yeah.
So I'm looking it up right now online. It says close 2022 movie drama coming of age story. And I'm just looking at the IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. It's scored very high.
Yeah, it's
It's like makes me, I mean, I'm kind of interested just how you described it. I would like to see what you saw and why everybody has it so highly ranked.
I really do think it's in that case, I definitely won't give anything away. I think that one, I'll call it like the turning point in the story. What I call the quote unquote twist. I think it depends heavily on how people reacted to that. It didn't work for me, but it worked, I think, for a lot of other people. So if you want to see it, Luis, you should definitely watch it and consider myself the minority opinion. So on the flip side, right, there's like that spectacle movie, I guess you could say, which is again like a simplified way of putting it. It's fresh on everybody's minds. It came out on Netflix. I'm treading very lightly because the director, Zack Snyder, gets way too much crap and also has
That's
like a
true.
very passionate fan base. Rebel
Yeah, he
Moon,
does.
right?
Oh, yes, I heard about this.
It is, if you're going to make like a quote unquote Star Wars ripoff or something like that, and this is a movie that also borrows from the Seven Samurai template that I mentioned earlier. There's nothing wrong with being derivative as long as there's excitement to it. But this, that being said, this is like a very derivative movie.
No.
Completely, the action sequences are. It's kind of interesting because Snyder has a lot of people say like his style is very attuned to movie trailers. Like he shoots scenes specifically for them to get into the movie trailers.
I could see that.
A lot of slow motion, a lot of capital S style, a lot of kaboom, if that's a good way to put it. And he tries very hard to, it's every action sequence is slow-mo, and it's like he's kind of holding back. And the characters aren't interesting. It keeps rushing through the plot. It's in a movie like Seven Samurai, when it takes the time to gather the core group together and explores what each of their personalities and their backstories. This one is just like point A to point B to point C. Let's get this through. And it doesn't even feel like a complete movie. Obviously, like there's another, it's part one and part two, but even for a part one type of movie, it just feels really incomplete.
I
And
have a question. So
yeah.
how much psychology slash memory is given thought to movies when they're being made? Because I mean, I would say like back in I would say what, like 1920s films, 1920s, 1950s films are obviously much different from today's films. And I guess the point I'm trying to drive about psychology and memory is, I mean, you already know that what the human person or human individual can only hold about what, 7 seconds of attention, and then they gotta see something else. Do you think that plays a huge role in cinema, psychology and memory?
I think so. I don't
Personality.
know. There was, I can't remember who said it, but I here, I'm gonna look it up real quick. But the idea is that like when you're reading a book, you're essentially when you're reading a book, there are two different versions of that book. The book that you're reading in the moment, and then the book that lives in your memory, like what you take from it afterwards. And I guess like two different mediums, of course, but I think I see that in a similar way, I guess. Are you put another way, like is a movie kind of like is it designed to hold your attention for a couple of hours, or is it something that you get a different perspective on it because of your impression on it, I guess, if that makes sense. What's happening on the screen versus how you remember it.
And why it lasts long if you do remember it.
Yeah, I hope that answered your question, Luis. It's a
No,
and of
I did. You did. I get it. I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I just find it very interesting is all. It's just kind of like I find it interesting that you mentioned like a book. Like a book, you know, there's the pre and then the post. The during, I would even say even during, pre, during, post,
For
book.
sure.
Yeah, definitely interesting parallels there.
I'm gonna put both of you in the hot seat and ask you your hot takes of movies from this past year or from way before. So whatever period or area you want to go to, what is your hot take?
Want to go first?
Oh, you want me to go first? Sure.
Yeah, by all means, go.
What is the hot take? I shouldn't say that this is the hot take. Again, it's kind of like the gold standard thing, right? I hate everything. No, I'm kidding.
I didn't
Hey,
realize
you
I
are
was
a
inviting
hater.
my brother twice to the podcast.
Hey, he's moving up in rank. He's moving up in
Apropos for this discussion, one hot take I have is. Juan, I think you had mentioned that you would consider Infinity War and Endgame kind of like the top tier of
Oh yeah,
superhero films.
definitely.
Uh-oh.
I think you're, I half agree with you. My hot take is that Infinity War is not the worst, not necessarily my least favorite, but the most overrated MCU movie.
Oh wow. Great. You just said that with
Whereas,
your full chest and everything.
oh, it's a release. No. And I say that because when I look at Infinity War and Endgame, I think if we want to talk into Marvel more broadly, I think those are two examples of the limitations of that overall franchise and what the franchise does well. And I think Endgame is the is what Marvel does very well, I think. It focuses on the characters, it resolves their arcs. It's not, because I think the consistent through line through a lot of these movies, and I would argue that the reason why they are so popular is because of the characters and they have personalities. There isn't a, I'll say MCU rather than Marvel, because I think there are two, there are nuances that kind of separate the two.
Certainly.
In the MCU, like not one character is really one note, I would say. And that's what I liked about Endgame. My issues with Infinity War are that it's basically an episode of television. It's you had to have seen like
Oh
you need like guides on, okay, so here are the four Marvel movies you have to see, and here are the ones that you should see
no.
to catch up to watch Infinity War. And then it's a movie to me that I don't think rewards that effort, because it's just spectacle, it's nonstop. It's like it you had to have seen like 15 or so movies to understand who these characters are. It's Thanos, his storyline is very compelling, I will say that. And it does move
Okay.
along. It's well paced. I think the Russo brothers are great television directors. I think there's a reason why they know how to hold an ensemble together. I think there's a reason
Okay.
why Arrested Development is so beloved. They directed a handful of episodes for that show, and they know how to keep characters together, and they're great television directors. And I don't know. I just, it's one of those things for me where Infinity War is just less than the sum of its parts. And it really only comes to life for me whenever we're focused on Thanos. And I will say that in the moment, the ending is pretty astonishing. And I like that. I feel about it differently in hindsight, but I like that they took the ending approach that they did.
Absolutely. Okay. I agree with that. I can agree with your assessment.
Juan's crying on the inside, by the way.
I can see it.
Can hear
Little
in his
tears.
voice he
Little
wants to
tears.
cry.
My voice cracking a little bit.
How about you, Luis?
Hot take on movies, huh? I don't know. Like you, I hate things.
Luis will go on a tangent on Grey's Anatomy for an hour.
Oh, jeez. Are we talking about movies or shows?
Oh, this is just shows. I should mention anything with DC. Luis can also talk about it for an
No. See,
hour.
I really don't like DC, but as far as a hot take, man, I mean, I kind of like most movies, but like
Okay.
you, I hate everything. But if I were to
It's
say a hot take, I don't know if I wouldn't consider it a hot take, but I'll go back to, let me go back to Scorsese. right?
All right.
So my thing with him is that to the Scorseses of the world, you know, their movies are great. The Departed, Raging Bull, right? Taxi,
Okay.
Taxi Driver. I mean, these movies are
He's
great.
buttering him up, but
They're
he's
raw.
coming in for a blow.
They're raw. They're raw. They're good. But like no one's taking that away from him, right? No one's going to take that away from these directors. But the past decade or so, I mean, the MCU movies have been outperforming them, and for very good reasons. You know, they're very entertaining, like you just mentioned. They're very entertaining. The directors, they're very good at what they do, and for that very reason, they're outperforming most of these movies, or most recent ones that they've been putting out. But to criticize their glory, to me, only highlights their fragile egos, right? These guys, the Scorsese types, their fragile egos and how jealous they could be. And in a way, I think their criticisms about popular movies this last decade is just not only a slap to the face to current movies, but to the audience as well, I think. Because I think it's a you are all too stupid to appreciate a good film kind of vibe. You wouldn't know a good movie if it hit you in the face type of vibe from them.
Okay.
So I
So
think
almost an elitist opinion, are you saying there?
very, very elitist. So I think the Scorseses of the world need to take a hard look for themselves or at themselves and just think, right? Because not all their movies, right? If you put them up against like a top 10, top 20 or whatever, and you put these movies up there, not all of them are huge hits, right? If you make a list, not all are great, not all are very good. So I'm sure there's some critics out there that can attest to that not all their movies are great. And I think they realize that, or they should realize that, but if they don't, then that
Do
just proves their
you
point.
have a not a favorite Scorsese film list? Is there a film on the Scorsese list that you're like, was not a fan of this one?
I want to say, and I'm gonna get so this is my hot take right here. This is a hot take.
This is the
Taxi
hot take.
Driver.
Taxi Driver.
Oh,
Yeah.
my stomach
Hurt.
sank. I'm just kidding.
Taxi Driver is like the whole time I was watching this, you see this guy, right? I don't know if I can just say spoilers or not, but I'm not going to just in case if people haven't seen it. But like you see the story of this guy and how it just unfolds. And in the very end, it's just like, what the f to me, it just kind of left me thinking, what the fuck? Or maybe that was the point. Maybe I just missed it.
All right.
But I was thinking, like, what the fuck? Like, what was this about? And maybe, Kurt, maybe you could fucking fill us in or fill me in. What was it about?
I think it's very much like there are nuances to that story. And I think what I would probably if I had to pick one, I would say Taxi Driver is my personal favorite of Scorsese's movies. And I think the reason for that is like it's never really clear, like even as this guy's kind of like devolving into madness and
Yeah.
like his desperation, right? There are insights here. Like, I think what I like so much about it is that it toes the line between being compelled in this character's journey, but also the fact that he's a very unlikable character. And it's the film implies, right, that he's racist and like he's talking about the scum of the streets in New York and all of that. And I think that's kind of what I find so compelling about is that like Scorsese has a way of pulling you into this warp mindset, and I really do mean mindset, like his own warp view, and like how it can kind of get you to try and be fascinated by unlikable characters and like the journeys that they take. It doesn't necessarily endorse his behavior or anything like that. It is ambiguous. I get what you're saying, Luis. It's not. The ending I know was criticized. I've been on like a Siskel and Ebert kick, of course talking about Roger Ebert earlier, and Gene Siskel talked about he didn't like the ending of that and like it just kind of took him out of the movie. So no, I think that's a fair point. I will say, I guess another kind of hot take. I think the movie Joker's kind of overrated.
Wait, Jokers or the Joker?
Joker, the
Hey,
Joaquin
there's very strong
Phoenix.
parallels in that movie and Taxi Driver, I think.
Yeah,
Oh,
and I think
wow.
it's kind of like two examples of like a similar, I won't say like similar story, but a similar idea of story and just like how to get that. Because I think like in Taxi Driver, there's a lot of internal stuff. Whereas in Joker, to me, it's always like, oh, the all this like a lot of contrivances that push
Interesting.
Joaquin Phoenix's character into the deep end. Joaquin Phoenix was very good in that movie, though. I'll give credit where it's due. So,
Maybe he doesn't.
Luis, was there a particular genre of movie that you liked? I know you talked about Juan and I kind of touched on this, and you talked about what Jose had mentioned.
Oh yeah, Luis, is there a particular genre that you like?
To be honest, I don't know. I don't think I have a like a preference. Like I know if you like to go watch Marvel movies, I watch them just because I, you know, like we grew up watching comic book or reading comic books, and we like superheroes. So in that case, I'll do it for myself. But it's not like it's my favorite. But to be honest, I really don't. But if you were to say, well, pick one, I'm gonna go ahead and say. And this is really weird coming from me, because I hate, right? I don't think you know how much I hate things. I don't think you know how much I hate things, but as a former soldier, I hate things military. Okay.
Oh,
But
yeah. You've
I
told me
do
this
like
before.
milit I do like some military films.
Okay.
Okay.
What's your example? Because yeah, this is interesting. What's To me, at least, because I know war movies are kind of like they have like a delicate balance, I think, in terms of, and this is just like overarching, trying to show the horrors of war, but not like trying to exploit it, I guess. So my question for you, Luis, is what's your version of a great war movie and a bad movie?
Oh, that's a good question.
I would say a great war movie. I enjoyed watching. And I'll watch this every time it's on. But I think a good one is Black Hawk Down.
Okay.
As both when you're viewing it, the point I like to take from it is, you know, as much as the US military like to tout its elite prowess, you know, they get humbled quickly here in that movie, right? In the event that took in Somalia. And for that very reason, I was like, hey, you watch it. And of course, the thing I hate about military movies is that they like to romanticize about the action in the war, right? The things that happen. And so that's what I don't like about military films is that they're almost advertising, right? Not
Sure.
almost, they are advertising.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I think if a good balance would be Black Hawk Down.
Cool.
And one that I don't like is probably The Patriot, if you consider it a war movie. It's
Is that
too
one with
much
Mel Gibson?
romanticism for me. It's like I can't get with it. I like the story, but it's not for me.
Gotcha. It's interesting.
But I would say those were two. Like Black Hawk Down would be a good one for me. And The Patriot would be one of the least liked.
Cool. Yeah, that's interesting. I get like those are two gaps. I haven't seen either of those, even though it's kind of like those are the films that like growing up, like they were around. They were always like present. It's kind of like you feel like you've seen a movie, even though you haven't, because of how many people are talking about it. It's interesting.
I mean, I guess another halfway in between those two movies, Platoon.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's one on my watch list. That's another big one that I haven't seen. My movie expert dumb has decreased like tenfold.
Yeah, I would say that. I would say, yeah, that would be it, man. If you were to tell me, hey, what kind of movies you like? Again, yeah, I hate it, but I like it. Military films. Fucking Black Hawk Down as my most favorite to watch, Platoon in the middle, and then kind of like the Patriot types in the very back.
Very
And
cool.
I would imagine it's because of your military experience that you've been able to critique kind of compare it to your own military life or your former military life and say, is that accurate or not accurate with the are the characters making good decisions as they go? So that to me,
Well,
that
I can't relate a lot to it because I was put I was a chaplain assistant, right? So my role was mostly support. So and most of the movies here are combat
Oh yeah,
oriented
very combat
OSs.
focused, yeah.
These guys were in the shit, right? But you know, like for me, we did go out in convoys. We did go out over. We went out the wire. So in a sense, you know, I do get the holy shit, it's a little bit frightening or whatever. And you know, I don't want to think about it too much, but like, yeah, it kind of resonates a little bit with me.
Okay.
But at the same time, it's one of the things what I hate but love to watch it.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's
Well,
def.
go ahead, Kurt. Sorry.
Oh no,
Go
I
for
was
it.
just gonna say, like, it kind of goes back to, I really do think we have our own personal biases that we acknowledge when we consume whatever, and I think that does impact. I think it does impact our way of seeing things, like the typical, like, whatever your version, whatever your thoughts of like the patriotic American, they're going to see war movies differently than a veteran like yourself, Luis. And all right, back to you, Juan.
Oh no, that's a great point. Kind of to almost end and really talking about a little bit of the main topic, but also transitioning toward the end. You all know that this cinema overall, and this has been a great discussion to really define it and look at it at a wider lens, because I think our just the between the three of us, we have a variety of styles that we enjoy and we enjoy watching. But I can honestly say that recently, and I'm speaking through Marvel, the Marvel Cinematic Universe lens, is that Marvel has learned, or Disney has learned, that too much of a good thing can be bad, especially its experience in this last year where a lot of its films were not performing to expectation.
The films and the shows.
Oh, and yeah, I forgot to mention this TV shows where a lot of people are now finding themselves going, I have to watch this show to keep up with this movie. A lot of people didn't understand that. Wanda crossing over into the kind of the dark side of her or right her villain era what was tied to WandaVision, right? So I'm wondering for the both of you, what is that delicate balance for a lot of films to make sure that they stay relevant, to stay, because now we're seeing, and I'm gonna backtrack a little bit, but not really, you're seeing a lot of remakes, a lot of reinterpretation of film, especially in Lord of the Rings, and now that being a epic show on Amazon Prime, and then remakes of various other films. But so yeah, what is that delicate balance? How do we continue start? How does film continue telling good stories without losing itself in mush? And it just cons this I have to constantly produce.
That is a good question because it's self con a movie should ideally be self-contained, and I think self-contained could mean like if you're making a franchise and there are like three to four upwards of three to four movies in a franchise, like the expectation I think is that there's you know, a good, that's like a solid batch of movies right there that flow into each other. That's, I think a good example of what I'm trying to get at is the John Wick franchise,
Oh,
where
okay, yeah.
the, I see it as the first film and then like a sequel trilogy of sorts, where the
Yeah.
first film is like its own standalone thing, very solid for what it is. And then it was such a hit and they kept producing sequels, but they used those three sequels to kind of explore the world a little bit around John Wick and kind of like do an overarching, like serialized thing. Where it gets tricky, I think, and I'd say that the MCU, and again, I want to distinguish between Marvel Comics and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think that the Marvel Cinematic Universe, what they accomplished is pretty unprecedented in terms of movies. It's essentially like the, if ever, like, a television show translated to cinema. That's what the Marvel Cinematic Universe is. Each phase is like a season. And there's one thing, and I think you touched on this one. One thing that I think is, you both have touched on this. Going back to my critique of Infinity War is to see whatever film in Phase 5 you would have had to have seen. I think Guardians Volume 3 is a good example. Which is, for the record, the only Phase 5 MCU movie that I watched. it's a sequel. It is a good one.
You watched a really good one, yeah.
It's a sequel to the first two Guardians movies, and that's expected. Like, you can't go into Guardians Volume 3 thinking, oh, this movie has to, like, feed me all the information about these characters. But it gets tricky because you would have had to have seen what happened in Infinity War to understand what's going on with Gamora's character. And to a certain extent, Endgame, right? And it's kind of like, and the really, you start to see the limits of like this overarching franchise thing and the fact that it tries very hard to serialize itself in just that gap. Because you're watching Guardians 1 and 2, and those are movies that, for the most part, stand on its own. Like, Thanos was teased at the post-credits Avengers scene, but Guardians is also a good introduction to Thanos. And Volume 2 carries that story along, but then Volume 3, even as it's carrying along the story with these characters, it's like, what's Gamora's deal? And obviously, like, so much has happened in between Volume 2 and Volume 3. Reasons on screen and off screen, of course, that it's kind of like, now we're missing gaps. It's like, can I enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 not having seen Infinity War? And I'm not sure that you 100% can.
Or having to watch that Guardians Christmas special to figure out that Mantis is... oh, wait. Well, I can't spoil it. Or should I?
Well, that's exactly right. You haven't... Yeah, that's a... I guess, like...
But I have to watch this now? Really?
It almost feels like assigned reading back in high school.
It's like, bro, this is a bullshit. Don't do this to me.
So I think Eternals is another good example of this, where...
Oh, yeah.
So Eternals, ideally, is like a fresh start for the MCU. And I think everything post-Endgame, what's really been holding it back is the fact that it has to keep going, recalling the snap, Thanos' snap. I think spoilers for Infinity War and Endgame, I think, are fair game. Do we agree?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yes. Oh, my God. It's been, what, how many years? Five, 6 years?
Oh, boy. Time flies. Five years felt like three times as much. Eternals is a movie that I don't think is great, but I think it's also underrated in a sense.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like a fresh start for these characters. And like Thanos, as far as I can recall, is only mentioned once during that entire movie. And it's like, and they mention Thanos to try and contextualize why the Eternals do what they do, why they don't get involved with conflicts that don't concern them. Right. That's a very, I'm simplifying the plot.
No. You're right on track. With that.
And, but now it's kind of like, you watch Eternals, assuming this is like your first MCU movie. It's like, who's Thanos? And like, obviously, like, this is kind of where it gets interesting. It's like, this is no longer an Easter egg. It's now like an essential part of the plot because the fact that Kit Harington's character mentions Thanos means that adds like a lot of stakes, you could argue, to why the Eternals have held back from these conflicts. And now it's kind of like writing itself into a corner. It's like now they have to find excuses for why the Eternals were not introduced until this late in the game, right? It's tough. I think when you think of other franchise films outside of superhero films, I think a good example of that balance is the Mission Impossible franchise. Where if you're, I think with, I think starting with the fifth movie, which is Ghost Protocol. No, it's Rogue Nation. Sorry. Ghost Protocol is the fourth one. Rogue Nation, Fallout, and the recent one, Dead Reckoning, they start like there are some common threads, like there are consistent characters. But what's so interesting about that franchise, especially in the earlier stages, is that you know, there's you should have kind of like it assumes that you have a general understanding of who Ethan Hunt is as a character and like his team. But you can go into any one of those movies, I think, and still enjoy them on their own terms. I think you could watch like Dead Reckoning and still have a good time with it. And whatever, and I would argue there are some things that you would have had to have seen from the previous movie, Fallout, but you're not asking yourself who these characters are. Like the movie does a good job telling its own self-contained story within like a larger umbrella, I think.
Any input that you want to have there, Luis?
No, I was gonna say, yeah, I see where Kurt's coming from. I definitely see the angle. I was gonna bring up Mission Impossible when we
Oh,
talked
okay.
about the string of movies. That was gonna be one of them, and also the Jason Bourne types, you know?
Yeah, great minds think alike.
Very much so. So y'all, I love the connections that we're making here and the conversations that we're having about not only the MCU but in general a lot of what movies are having to fight against, and not only fight against but also how to draw their audience in. And Kurt, to your point, I think that Disney is trying so hard to interconnect all their franchises, and really make it feel like a Disney experience, that I think it's taken away some of that magic, and I know that's what they're trying to strive for. But yeah, inevitably you box yourself in when you're trying to make too many story arcs that overlap, and people are starting to look at what is the direction, what is the storytelling, the consistency. People have already gotten after the MCU for some time jumps, for plot holes, things that the directors weren't thinking at the time. So, all that being said, I think now Marvel is finding itself in a corner where it has to continuously build to the next big thing, and it's right now at the moment struggling to find its footing.
You enjoying this franchise one, is
I love
there
it.
a is there one particular movie or show? Let's the Disney Plus shows are essentially 6-hour movies, right? That should have been like at least
Oh my
a
gosh,
quarter of
yes.
the
Let's go. Yes. Right, right,
length.
right.
WandaVision is the only installment that should have been a show. Anyway, I digress. So, Juan and Luis, is there, whatever your thoughts on this franchise, is there kind of like a, is there one movie or show that's kind of like a turning point for you in terms of where the franchise is going and like something that kind of made you think, like, okay, this is kind of where it's getting, to your point, Juan, like a little bit shakier, a little more, like there are now like limitations. Is there like a specific turning point?
That's a great question. I think for me, it was how they were going to handle the end of WandaVision. I felt that the ending to WandaVision was a bit rushed. The buildup was incredible. Like I cannot knock them for the buildup. It was incredible.
Episodes one
It
through
was,
four.
yeah, it was how they handled the end and the repercussions and consequences that Wanda wasn't going to face until Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. I think it, and if we want to point at any movie, that's a turning point. Right there is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, where fan expectation didn't meet the overall product what was put, and I think people were like, okay, we understood that Wanda was going to be the villain in the film, but we didn't expect that when you label yourself the Multiverse of Madness, that we were expecting an exploration of the multiverse, right? And instead it just focused on it had a horror element, which again, I love Sam Raimi for it, but this one was a little bit off the beaten path, and that was a turning point for me. Even though I still love the film, but it was a turning point.
Zombie Doctor Strange.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
The sheet music fight is really cool.
Yes. I like the soundtrack. I do like the
Again, Juan's bias.
Oh gosh. There,
I
Luis
like
is
the
pulling me
soundtrack. I
back.
like the movies, man. Juan, get out of here. How can I trust you, Juan?
You
Nah.
know, none of my ratings will I don't think you could ever trust them
All your
ever.
ratings are like, you have to bring them down a peg by like a point or a 1.5 points every time, bro.
And I think the films like recently, like Ant-Man Quantumania, has already signaled the direction that Marvel wants to take. And now with the recent with the departure of Jonathan Majors from his role as Kang,
Yeah.
that you know what happens to Marvel now? What happens to the MCU? So I'm excited to see where it goes.
Replacement, just like they
Yeah,
did Rhodey.
just like what they did with Rhodey, what they did with Cassie and various other characters.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely. Yeah, at least that's my take. That's my take.
There,
I would say
sorry, Luis, go for it.
shit. I'll probably just, I don't know. I probably, it's rare, but this on this point, I would probably agree with Juan. So my answer would probably be this kind of similar, but I don't know. After it seems like even after Endgame was when it kind of turned for me, but even before then, where there were parts of the movies where you're like, well, why did they add that? Why did they put that there? And it seems like it's, and I guess. It seems like the irony here is the magical mouse is taking the magic from these stories or from most of
Oh,
the.
that's a good that was a good take, Luis.
Yeah, and that's my take right there. Is like, it's so weird to see, it's so weird to see that this movie, these movies, for the past decade or 10 plus years, have been the it,
Oh, yeah,
right?
they
They have been the
dominated.
it to watch, dominated movies. You know, and then all of a sudden now it's the turning point where now you're starting to see the downfall, and all that magic is, I guess, gone, or it's losing its magic. I don't know.
Yeah. So two things that I kind of want to touch on. It's I asked the question of like the specific movie that is kind of like the turning point. I think if I had to pick one, I'd agree with you both. It would be Doctor Strange and Mom. I'm gonna call it that.
Doctors and mom,
Yeah.
yes.
A lot of interesting pieces, like the pieces in terms of the narrative, but also set pieces, like the very fun sheet music fight. Sam Raimi knows how to shoot sequences, and like horror is his jam. Well, it's not just his jam, but like I think Evil Dead, right, is like the movie that comes to mind. It's like Sam Raimi, Evil Dead, Scorsese, Taxi Driver, right? And but like very, it starts to become like less than the sum of its parts, because you have with Disney purchasing Fox, right? There's all this skepticism of like how the X-Men are going to be integrated, and so now they're
Expectations.
showing, yeah, like Professor Xavier shows up, and then Reed Richards, right? It's like, oh, people want to see this, so let's do that. And oh, were you say something? Sorry.
No, I was just going to add to what you're saying, Kurt. There, it's a lot of fan service there, and that's
Yeah.
where Marvel is finding itself now. It's doing what DC did early on. They did a lot of fan service.
It was done, I think it was, I think there, this is kind of a weird example. I was going to say it was done pretty well in WandaVision, but I'm not so sure. I think in the moment when you find out that Evan Peters, who played Quicksilver in X-Men, he's introduced in Days of Future Past and Apocalypse. when he shows up to play Quicksilver in WandaVision. It's like, oh, that's kind of interesting how he's like recasting these roles, and it's also an extension of like her grief and what she's going through. Yeah. And then they were just kind of like, oh, it's just some random guy and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, come on.
Yeah, don't do that.
It was essential middle done, finger to the fans. Don't do that. And to call him what they call him, the last name was Boner or something, and it was like,
yeah,
why?
Yeah, again, the magical mouse at work.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot, and like Disney, I think, they are pretty much like Exhibit A for like the how not to run a franchise. And I think Star Wars is a good example of this.
Oh my gosh.
Lots of hot takes here, right? When you
consider I didn't realize we were going to dive right into like the hot takes of hot takes.
For the record, and I don't mind saying this, I am a Last Jedi fan. I will like defend that movie.
Which one?
The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi. You like that one. Okay. Yeah. Respect.
But like for the sake of argument, considering the very vocal response to that movie, that kind of like, because you think about how George Lucas wanted to sell off the franchise to a different generation of filmmakers to like take his ideas and do interesting things with it, which I haven't seen every segment, but I think Star Wars Visions, which gathers like different animation studios and tells their own like interesting Star Wars stories, is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's essentially like George Lucas's idea is now in the Disney, like Disney is essentially in charge. Like, I'm not going to say like Kathleen Kennedy, it's like this company, it's like writing movies by committee in a way. Like, you think about the very vocal response to The Last Jedi and how they had to bring back J.J. Abrams to quote unquote write the ship, and then like The Rise of Skywalker happened. Whatever your opinions on the movies, like, I think considering the response and how Disney has been responding to that response with Star Wars, I think that's a good example of like a franchise under the Disney umbrella that's wanted to take risks at first, to the extent that like The Force Awakens, which is basically A New Hope, right? But a good like a good example of like history repeating itself. I digress.
No, yeah.
And like Rogue One, for example, of like Star Wars as war movie, putting like emphasizing the war in the title. I guess you see like how a franchise in different hands took risks at first, and now they're becoming very risk adverse based on like the how people are responding to it.
Just as an anecdote, Rogue One is still my favorite movie. Like when it came out and I watched it, that movie I can watch over and over again. I think
of the I other thought it was Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, I still love Spider-Man. Still top of the movies, but among the Star Wars films, Rogue One ranks at the very, very top.
Right.
I'm basic, and I think Empire Strikes Back is like the definitive Star Wars movie to me.
Oh man, get away from Empire! I mean, it set up it Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, that one crawled so Infinity War could run. I think
Revenge of the Sith for me.
Gotcha. this is gonna get intense. But yeah, and I think like also, I know it's more than Disney, right? It's not just about Disney. It's I think their animated movies, whether they fall under the Disney or the Pixar brands, or I'll say labels. I think when you say brand, that likes it, that's like a different connotation in a sense. But they have been, for the most part, like that, where like Disney's most original movies of recent memory, I think, have come by. They're not too concerned with IP and all that stuff. But you're starting to see with their 100th anniversary, right? I haven't seen Wish, but from my understanding, it's kind of like a 100-year anniversary to itself. And like from what I've heard, it's kind of like suggesting a interconnected universe of all these Disney characters and stuff like that.
Oh wow.
And it's like a weird It's like an interesting thing because I don't know if you both are like Frozen fans or anything like that, but
I liked it. It's a good movie.
that's kind of what, how I feel. It's like I like the first one, but I don't think it's great.
No.
And this Frozen 2 is, and I bring that up not to like bash on whatever Disney, whatever, but that's a sequel that keeps referring back to the first one. It's like, here's what you liked about this one, so we're just going to give you more of that. Are you pushing, I guess the overarching thing is like, are you pushing the story forward? Which, for the sake of argument, is something that I think The Last Jedi does very well based on the foundation set by The Force Awakens. Or are you just kind of like reverting back to the same thing?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Very, very good question. All right, y'all. So I think we're at the end of our podcast here. And if y'all don't want to believe me or believe it or not, we've been talking for about an hour and a half, more than that.
This
So,
always flies when we do this, man.
Your season premiere has got to be big, right?
gotta go big. So, Kurt, I want to give you the mic for your profound thought, and then Luis and I, Luis, you and I will close it out. All right.
Well, let me state again that it was a pleasure chatting with you both. And again, I really enjoy this podcast. It's you cover a lot of interesting topics, and you always have the very personable approach to them.
Thank you,
And
Kurt.
this is kind of like the and like I just think this podcast is a vibe. And so I think it was a pleasure chatting with you both. Luis, it was great meeting with you. Juan, it was great
Yes,
catching
sir.
up with
Likewise.
you.
Likewise, man.
I really hope I didn't overtake the
Oh,
conversation because
no,
I
not at
felt like I
all.
talked
I
way
think
too
we were picking at
much.
your brain, and we were like, because from an outsider's perspective, right, you've got a guy that, at least for me, I can only speak for myself, very much in the MCU. And when I follow you and I look at your social media and you suggest movies, it's like, oh, I got to go watch that. That's got to be a top of the list. Like you suggested Poor Things and what was the other one? Asteroid City. I was like, I got to go see that. So yeah, I like being able not to live in the MCU, but also to explore other movies as well. And Luis, I don't
Sure.
know.
What's your Instagram? Do you have an Instagram, Kurt?
Yes, I do. It's Kurt KURT dot Munz, MUNZ. Very like basic, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, again, I thought it was great being on here, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, Kurt, and you're welcome to be back anytime.
Yeah, I look forward to it. This was great.
Yeah, we need to expand this more, man.
Yeah, for sure. Like
Absolutely.
we were just scraping the surface. We need to get into it a little bit more.
Yeah, we need to do a part
Yeah.
two. Part two coming
Yeah,
soon.
definitely
Part
part
two,
two.
yes.
Across
Beyond the fifth dimension, across the fifth dimension.
the fifth dimension. I love that.
It's going to be a very interesting year, I think, for a lot of us, for a lot of reasons, not least of which is that it's an election year.
Oh my
And
gosh. Yeah.
without going too into specifics, it's going to be like people are going to be at each other's throats quite a bit, I imagine. And there's already like a lot of stuff and a lot of tensions going on. So I think on that note, like as we gear up for what will be an interesting year and hopefully a very rewarding year in many respects, I will just say that regardless of where you're coming from, just be sure to express empathy to the people around you. We're never sure what one person is going through, or what one group of people are going through, or anyone for that matter. And I think that's just kind of like the message I want to cap this off with. It's like, be willing to listen, disagree respectfully, of course, from anything regarding politics or Star Wars or Marvel movies. Just like,
The the
The worst one is,
Revenge
I don't know, Attack of the Clones.
the
spread kindness, enjoy, be empathetic, always be willing to listen. I'm not saying like you have to be happy all the time, but like just always be like true to yourself and be honest with yourself and just vibe. Good vibes
that.
Wherever you can find it. And if there are bad vibes, just take the time to listen. And again, just empathy. I hope if there's one thing that I hope we exercise more as we head into this year, that's going to be again contentious, but hopefully a good one. And hopefully like we're hearing about whatever's going on, all these things going on in the world, just like, show empathy.
Show empathy. Love that.
Empathy, yeah.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
I think I just like what I always say at the end of every episode, man, I think it's just important to realize your realization of reality. I think it's important now more than ever, right, to raise our own individual levels of consciousness and strive to improve step by step those levels of consciousness and awareness.
Very good, Luis. And also,
very well said, Luis.
Absolutely. So I always sign off with the update to the doomsday clock. So we are still currently at 90 seconds to midnight, folks. So 90 seconds to midnight, the metaphorical doomsday clock. I will let you know, as of this publishing, yes, in January is usually when the doomsday clock gets updated. So we're getting an update in 2 to 3 weeks. So I'll be updating my sign off at that point.
Oh, wow.
So, but please, 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 please always show kindness, empathy, and always be aware of each other and make sure that we're always acknowledging the other person's existence as well. So with that, we sign off. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.